agenda item number 12, which is the offenders list.
Good afternoon, everyone.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Three offender cases.
Speak up.
First one is Rocky Ray.
Rocky Ray in the room? Please come forward, sir. Represented by counsel. Welcome, Ms. Rhodes. Ms. Rhodes. Mr. Ray, I need to swear you in case you testify at any point here today, and the officer as well here. Do you hereby swear the testimony you'll give here today will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
Yes, sir.
Terrific. Thank you. Please proceed.
Okay. Mr. Ray's first appearance before the commission as a natural resource offender during the January 2016 commission meeting, the commission decided to revoke his licenses and privileges under Section 28.2232 for 6 months from January 26, 2016 through July 25, 2016, followed by 1.5 years probation, July 26, 2016 through January 25, 2018, on to a warm water violation.
Officer Springfield. What can you tell us about this case?
This occurred on May 11th, 2016. I've received information from another officer from another area that a vessel was coming to unload fish at Wanchee's Fish House in the city of Hampton that possibly had two persons on board the vessel that were either revoked or suspended. I responded to the area, stood on the dock approximately 50 yards from the boat, which was already unloading at the time when I got there, and observed a subject that I know, this was at 1545 hours, subject I know is Rocky Ray was inside the vessel and was shoveling catch from the hull of the boat towards, from the cab, near the cabin, from the hull of the boat into a bucket where another person was taking the bucket and putting it on a conveyor and taking it over to the Wanchee's Fish House. The boat was docked but was in the water. I watched this activity for probably 45 minutes the entire time Mr. Ray was working, shoveling fish with a shovel, and had another officer that was working come to the fish house. When he came to the fish house, the third person that was standing on the dock says something and or made a motion like he was speaking. Mr. Ray stopped what he was doing, went into the cabin of the boat, and shut the door. I was dressed in my uniform but was in a pair of rubber rain suit. So I went over there and stood on the dock and asked if anyone else was in the boat, and, of course, everybody said no, and I hollered out, and Mr. Ray came out of the cabin at the time. I approached Mr. Ray about what he was doing, and he said that he wasn't working. When I told him I saw him working, he said he was just trying to make a living. I set this case for Hampton General District Court the following month. Mr. Ray did not show up, and Judge in Hampton found him guilty of working while he was revoked.
Can I understand the rules of evidence? Can you play? Yeah, under 28.2262.
Terrific.
And he's offering hearsay.
Okay. Let's confine it just to the facts. You will have an opportunity to cross-examine them.
Thank you.
We're talking about what happened in court?
Is
the problem?
We need to know the disposition in court.
Disposition was found.
The rules about, like, the code that we're dealing with, if I understand, we're on the 28.2232. That's governing the hearing under 28.2-216. It says the rules of evidence shall be used when possible. I can't imagine a more possible situation than what he's about to talk about, which is what the disposition of a case in the courtroom. There may be competent evidence to prove that, but at this point, I would think the officer can tell us what happened, what a judge did in the courtroom, and that would be hearsay. We're dealing with a couple of different rules, but I think the best evidence rule in the code would be governing, certainly if we're in a courtroom, but since the code seems to have incorporated the Virginia rules of evidence, I think the best evidence rule is going to require that officer to do something.
I think at the moment here we begin the discussion between dueling attorneys. So may I ask Mr. Hall here to give his legal interpretation?
Sure. So the commission has been provided the records from the courthouse. So we do have, you know, what's called best evidence, which is the record of the conviction.
That's all I'm asking.
Okay.
I don't want the officer to be able to recite it because that's clearly hearsay. I think if we're going to use
Well, I don't know what the so for, to be hearsay, it has to be an out-of-court statement or an out-of-hearing statement. That's
the commission asked him what was the disposition.
So what's
the disposition is recorded on a piece of paper. He was about to tell us what a judge said. That's clearly.
Oh, I sorry. I'll rephrase the question here. Was there an adjudication in court?
Sir, I have a copy of the.
It's still a hearsay request. You're asking for what happened.
No, we have to have a statement that's.
Right, you have it in your hand.
But this is admissible evidence.
It may be. You haven't offered to admit, is all I'm saying.
Well,
you're trying to do indirectly what you can do directly.
Mr. Commissioner, has he identified himself?
Yes, he has.
William Root.
William Root.
Yep, first floor
you,
of this building.
Thank you.
Law Office of William Root.
So I guess to address the objection, we have to offer the summons into evidence.
And that would be one of the issues I wanted to talk with the commission about with regard to Mr. Ray's case. I got my own copy of the document. It's a document from the Jones Report. It was written by this officer. It had a charging code section, which was student happy.
That's fine.
4 VAC 20-1280-30, which is under the state bias check. That's a particular code in the Virginia Code of Regulations. If I say federal code of regulations, I apologize.
That's right.
I always mean Virginia Code of Regulations. This here is being held under the auspices of 28.2-232, which in order to suspend, revoke, or deny Mr. Ray a license has to prove a violation of the subtitle of 28.2, subtitle 2 in particular. That document is not relevant to that purpose because it does not cite a violation of code section 28.2-anything. So it's not from a violation of the subtitles and therefore irrelevant.
That's not correct. So if you read the BMRC versus Inslee case from the Court of Appeals, there were violations of regulations at issue there, too, and the court noted that there was the violations of the regulations were violations of 28.2-201, which is a statute that sort of authorizes the promulgation of those regulations. But it was in there. The court did recite that they did violate that section.
But I don't know that the argument I'm making was made in that case. I'm making a different argument than the counsel in Inslee. I'm saying that there has to be relevant evidence under rules of Supreme Court 2:401.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't have a violation of a subtitle, then that information you have in front of you on that piece of paper is irrelevant.
I don't know if there's anything more to be said here, but that's right.
I think that we will have a difference of opinion here and interpretation from the attorneys here. I will proceed. This will be certainly grounds for an appeal if you so choose to do.
Can I make a second point since we've started?
While we're at it.
Yeah. Judge, I'm assuming counsel is off of it at this point, and the commission has accepted the document. Is that a fair assumption?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
The officers indicated that Mr. Ray would not appear in the general district court. The court, now that the documents admitted on the first, said check the box, tried in absentia. There's been no indication that Mr. Ray waived his right to be present. And a voluntariness argument is inappropriate. have someone in absentia has to jump through a number of hoops and prove that it, literally a continuance would prejudice the Commonwealth at the very least that it would have to be. The officer indicated he went to court, he was the only one there. Presumably, I've seen this officer in court many times, going to court is part of his job. No other citizen was going to be inconvenienced. If there's no indication that a proper waiver is taken of Mr. Ray's right to confront the witnesses, especially at the arraignment, because we're talking about a criminal charge. I think it's important to know that. It's a criminal charge under that code section, the Code of Regulations. It's a Class 3 misdemeanor for first offense, Class 1 misdemeanor on the second or subsequent. So, Mr. Ray had to be arraigned prior to proceeding. The fact that the court didn't decided to proceed put the commission, and the officer did absolutely nothing. I don't even know if the court asked him, do you want to proceed now or do you want to send out a show cause and go get it? But in order to be competent evidence under the case just decided April of last year, that there has to be no constitutional infirmity on the face of the document. That has a constitutional infirmity on the face of the document. The Commonwealth Commission is not offering a waiver of this defendant's rights to confrontation. So
well,
I don't think it's competent evidence to do what the commission wants.
And I agree. I would say at this particular point here, whether or not Mr. Ray was present or not in the courtroom and whatever surrounding that, whatever happened is not really relevant for our discussion here at this point under our mandate under the Code of Virginia 28.2-232. So I would ask the commission here to ignore any reference and to wipe out in their brains any reference to Mr. Ray's presence or not in court on that particular day. However, we do have a conviction and the evidence in the documents that support that.
Of course I have.
Commissioner.
I was practicing to say commissioner.
That's okay.
I respect what the court is asking your fellow board members to do, but that's not what Mr. Ray is guaranteed by the Constitution. You're asking the board to ignore that he wasn't there. I'm asking you to ignore the piece of paper because he wasn't. Because the court didn't do what it should have done to protect his rights. And when the court fails, and the Commonwealth, i.e., fails, to protect his rights, that cannot be used against him.
Why didn't he appeal then?
Pardon?
Why didn't he appeal the conviction?
It's not a matter of what he should have done. It's a matter of what the court did to him. That's the problem. The court is the number one protector of our rights.
Well, how is the violation of his rights apparent on the face of the document?
It says they tried him in absentia.
Right.
There is no waiver attached to the document. You have to have a knowing, intelligent, and voluntary waiver of your rights before that document can be used against you.
But
I can cite a case or two for you if you want.
Sure.
it's also predicated on a U.S. Constitution case by the name of SISK, S-I-S-K. In reading from the Court of Appeal, well, it's an opinion, it's an unpublished opinion, counselor, but it recites a published opinion. The unpublished opinion is Carson versus Greenville, April 12, 2016, out of the Court of Appeals, citing James versus the Commonwealth, which is a 1994 published case that says, in order to show predicate offenses, the Commonwealth's burden is satisfied when it, quote, produces a properly certified conviction from a court of competent jurisdiction, which appears on its face to be a valid final judgment, provided that all felony cases and those misdemeanor proceedings where imprisonment resulted, there is evidence establishing that the defendant was represented by or properly waived counsel in earlier criminal proceeding. That's not what the argument is. The argument is that he wasn't present.
Right. Understood.
Upon such a showing by the Commonwealth, the presumption of regularity has been applied unless the defendant presents credible evidence that there is some constitutional infirmity in the judgment, it must stand. And I'm saying to you that the lack of a waiver of the right to be present is a constitutional infirmity.
Didn't he waive it by not being there?
No, sir, he did not. And I'll tell you, it says there is a presumption in a law, in a criminal case, is great. To presume something in a criminal case is really strong. There is a presumption against a defendant's waiver of any constitutional right. An intentional relinquishment or abandonment of a known right or privilege is required. And that's quoting Sis versus the Commonwealth, which went to the Supreme Court.
So how was the court supposed to get this waiver when he wasn't there?
That's what I'm telling you. They should have issued a document sending out Officer Springfield or any other lawful officer to arrest him, or at least bring a show cause against him and have him come, or you run the risk and put the commission in this position that you're going to use an unconstitutional conviction to take his property right or his license.
Yes.
That's the argument, Commissioner Ball. I appreciate hearing. I tried to keep it as succinct, and I'm trying to speak with counsel, and he's trying to, I think, interpret what I'm saying to you. But the upshot is it's not a valid conviction. And there's 1,000 cases that say you can't use an invalid conviction to support a statute where something is being done to either elevate the punishment or take something away.
Well, Counselor, it's an eloquent, creative argument. And I see your point, but for the purposes at hand here, what you're asking us to do is to ignore the evidence that we have that a court did find rule on a conviction in this case, and I am loath to put this issue off at this point here. I'm basically going to rule that your objection is overruled, that the evidence as presented at this point that there was indeed a conviction is accepted by the commission. And we will proceed with this, knowing full well that if you want to take an appeal on this, you certainly have that right.
Thank you.
Can I testify the disposition, sir?
Yes.
Okay, on June 14, 2016, Hampton General District Court, he failed to appear, was convicted of a Class 3 misdemeanor, and fined $500. And given $121 court cost, which has not been paid as of today.
Are there any questions of the officer from the commission? Counselor, would you like to cross-examine the officer? To all your heart's content.
You've been here a long time. Officer, all you saw this gentleman doing was shoveling fish. You never saw him with a line in the water, never using a spray, nothing like
that. No, sir. They were tied to the dock on the boat, and he was shoveling fish.
And you, the code section that you decided to use, why did you choose that section?
It's the only violation of a revocation, as far as I know, that we have.
How about they're just failing to have a license under 282, I think it's 225.
A lot of difference, in my opinion, of not having a license and having your license suspended or revoked. That's why I use that code.
So you are aware of the section that's within the subtitle and chose not to use it?
I'm not sure which one you're talking about.
225 says you can't fish without a proper license.
Yes, sir. I'm familiar with both of the no license, the very minor one and then the one that's for commercial.
Well, you say minor.
There's a no fishing license.
I got that part. That's a Class 1 misdemeanor first offense, correct?
I think the second one you talked about was.
The one 20.2-225 is a Class 1 misdemeanor for first offense, right?
Yes, sir.
What you charged him with, 4 VAC 20-1280-30, is a Class 3 misdemeanor on a first offense, which is a fine only. Class 1 misdemeanor carries up to a 12-month penalty and a $2,500 fine. A Class 3 misdemeanor first offense is a maximum of $500. You charged him with the minor offense, right, instead of the major offense?
I was talking about a different fishing license, but yes, I charged him with the Class 3 intentionally.
But when you did it, did you know it wasn't part of the subtitle that was the purpose of the court?
I'm not sure what
Hold on a second. Officer.
I mean, that's not a factual question. It's a legal question.
Well, if, I'm asking if he knew, well, his answer that he knew was aware. I'm asking if the 28.2-225
knows that that. I would have to. I don't know if I harkens. I looked up the codes when I charged him.
Right.
And charged him with what I thought was the proper code, exactly what I intended to charge him.
And the. At the risk of asking your legal question in contradiction of counsel, acting right to object if he wants to, but there is no definition for what it means to fish under 28.2, correct? Are you aware of
that? Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes.
What is it? You know?
I would have to read it, but it pretty much everything that you do on a boat, especially commercial fishing, in my opinion, I can't read it out by heart, but it's pretty much everything they do on a boat that involves commercial fishing.
That's a good one on the record.
You can also charge a guy fishing from the bank without a fishing license under 225 as well as you could charge a commercial fishing. Right?
225 is not what we normally charge.
Right, but it's possible.
I've never done
it.
I guess
it's appropriate. If you choose as an officer of the law,
I would never choose.
But you could.
Got it?
Yep.
Counselor, Mr. Hall here is going to inject a little something into the record here to go to what you were questioning.
So just for clarity's sake, 28.2-100 defines fishing or to fish means all operations involved in taking or catching, using, setting, or operating apparatus employed in killing, taking, or catching, or transporting or preparing for market marine fish, shellfish, and marine organisms.
Is that parallel to 4 BAC 20-12-80-20? That's where the definitional section is set up the regulation.
I would imagine so, but let me hang on. I'll find it.
You have any other questions?
No, Counselor? I appreciate his patience, and he answered any questions best. Thank you.
Sure.
Did I call you Judge?
That's it's okay.
Sorry.
What, you said 12-80-20?
Yeah, it's the, he's charged with -30-20 is the definition of sanctuary.
Okay.
Gender. The whole argument would be if it's not parallel, then you could be convicted under that section that the document reports, and you could be doing something different and not be in violation of the code 28-2-225.
And it's the exact same definition in both places.
Any questions of the officer? Okay. Thank you, officer.
Thank you.
Staff, is there a recommendation here?
In accordance with Section 28.2232 of the Code of Virginia, staff recommends the commission revoke all Mr. Ray's commission issued licenses for a period of 5 years from the date of this commission meeting, January 24, 2017, through January 23, 2022. Staff also recommends the commission prohibit the issuance, reissuance, and renewal of any of Mr. Ray's licenses during the revocation period. Staff recommends the commission revoke Mr. Ray's fishing privileges within the Commonwealth's tidal waters for a period of 5 years from the date of this commission meeting, January 24, 2017, through January 23, 2022. Staff recommends the commission take discretionary action concerning the potential of a civil penalty.
Counselor, would you like your client to testify? Would you like to weigh in at this point?
I would just be reiterating what I said. It is a closing argument?
I would guess technically it's akin to that. I mean, in front of the commission here is whether or not to revoke Mr. Ray's licenses and his tidal fishing privileges, and how long, for up to 5 years under 28.2-232, and whether or not to impose a civil penalty of up to $10,000. I would imagine you would have some compelling arguments on what the appropriate disposition of this case should be.
I was asking you if it was closing argument because it'd be, if we were moving right to what the penalty should be, that's presuming that the commission has decided and found that the evidence is sufficient, that he violated the parameters of 28.2-233 to proceed. And I hadn't heard the commission make a decision. Your Honor, I think I need to call you.
Well, I would like to hear everything that you would have to say about this case and the facts thereof and the events that happened and what you think or your arguments should be or are and how the commission weighs the evidence and makes a decision. And then we will find out whether or not the commission wants to proceed with this or dismiss this or reach a conclusion.
That'll be very brief, because I've said just more than I thought I was going to say here today. The commission and the board to find that the evidence is insufficient to revoke Mr. Ray's license. And in large part, and based on the two arguments that I've made, there's probably a couple others just kind of rolled in, but the two major arguments are the code section is wrong on the summons and respectful counsel's interpretation of Inslee is different than mine, and I will find that the issue in Inslee, which was punishment, and is it appropriate for the court to send that case back or to change the punishment that the commission decided on? That's what Inslee was about to make. But the fact that they didn't, you haven't made a finding that he violated a subsection of 28.2, subtitle 28.2, particularly subtitle 2, then you can't revoke his license because you haven't met the burden that is placed upon the commission by the statute. The other argument is that what is purported to be a valid conviction is in no way a valid conviction. It cannot be evidence used against this amendment because it's a violation of the Sixth Amendment constitutional right to the Constitution.
So if the commission, I'll ask you a hypothetical here, if you would, Mr. Ritz. Commission here takes votes and decides that, yes, there's enough evidence to justify proceeding with an actual decision on a sanction. Will that change your argument at all, or will you have more things to add?
Well, I'm laboring under the procedure I'm used to. I wouldn't change my argument why it would be wrong to take Mr. Ray's license. The punishment, I would suggest, for what he is alleged to have done, and I understand completely what the definition of fishing and to fish is in Virginia. Believe me, I've spent many hours trying to find it in 2015. I found it in the Code of Regulations. And I understand that taking what the officer saw under the Code of Regulation to shovel fish means he's fishing under that definitional section. I get that 100%. But it doesn't say to me that he was out doing what I think the purpose of the statute was is to be out in the water, taking the resources out of the water and placing them into the marketplace, knowing he doesn't have a valid license. I see him as a helper on a boat, getting the stuff into a bucket, just so that gentleman who owned the boat could take it to market. With that, I understand he has a minor pickup or two, but they're fairly old. I see they're 5 years old at least. For the last 5 years, he's been general good behavior. And a five-year taking for a young man, obviously, would be a tremendous, crippling punishment and wouldn't necessarily fit the offense for which he has been found guilty. So if the commission finds that a penalty is necessary, I would ask them not to, ask you all not to suspend his license and place a fine against Mr. thereof, because he's then going to have to go out with his license and work to pay that fine, which would benefit the commission, the community in general, perhaps. Since we're not in court, I'm going to say to the other fishermen or watermen in the community that may be floating that close to the line, that they know that the commission certainly is serious about all the regulations and wants to follow the regulations that are aware of the law to shovel fish is a violation and will cost you if you choose to do that while your license is suspended. So I'm asking, instead of a suspension of this license, that there be literally this community service. In a criminal sense, is to go out and work, and while you're working, you're basically working for the state to pay the fine, and so the commission required to use the fines collected in these circumstances for particular purposes. So he'd be working to
Under state law, any civil penalty that's enacted by this board goes to the Virginia Marine Improvements Board, which is an entirely different board, an entirely different agency, and an entirely different secretariat. And they are the ones that market and promote Virginia's seafood.
Off the record, we really want to help them.
Marine Products Board, thank you.
I still think it's a general overall help to the Commonwealth.
Yeah.
So I don't think it'd be a bad thing to more or less impose community service on the show as opposed to crippling them.
Anything further to add? Are there questions from the commission? Mr. Erskine.
I do have a question. Maybe I'm a little confused in all the back and forth, but at first I thought you were arguing for your client that he did not, in fact, violate any code section, regardless of what it might have been. Now I think I just heard you say that he was, but you're arguing that by shoveling fish, that's not fishing. Is that right?
No, sir. I tried to follow my sword just a moment ago. I said that I agree that under the code of regulation, what he is said to have done, what the officer said he did here today, shoveling fish into a bucket, is preparing fish for market in the broadest sense of the word. I don't think I can avoid that. I'm saying that what was proven against him in a court of law, or what happened to him in court, should not have happened, because he has certain rights. And also, it doesn't fit what the purpose of this hearing is, as I understand the code. So I wasn't saying that he didn't do anything. I'm saying that what was shown should not have resulted in that conviction, because of not factual matter, but for constitutional matter.
Okay, so.
But I certainly acknowledge the definition fit whatever it is he said it did.
Maybe a follow-up for counsel of the commission. So does it sound like it's an issue here or the previous?
No, I think he's trying to collaterally attack a conviction, which you're really not allowed to do. And besides that, I mean, this is not a criminal proceeding here. And so there's, you know, none of this is really, an issue that the commission needs to worry itself over.
Okay.
May I respond to
Thank
the
you.
Counsel?
Yeah, please.
Briefly.
Please.
I think the problem, it's a problem for the watermen, but I think it's a problem for the board in a more general sense, that this hearing is triggered by that conviction or that piece of paper. That makes that piece of paper relevant to this hearing, because these two statutes are intertwined. 28.2-232 is intertwined with both 28.2-225, fishing without a proper license, and 4 BAC 20-1280-30, commercially fishing without a license. So when you get one of those with your license suspended, you are coming here. So that has everything to do with this condition.
All right.
I just have a follow-up, maybe if I can.
Let me cut to the chase here. So what you're asking, Counselor, is that an offender who doesn't show up in court and is convicted in his absence is not eligible to have any sort of license sanction imposed upon him by this board. Is that what you're arguing?
Yes, sir. And the reason I'm saying that is because when that document and that officer appeared before, appeared before the judge in the General District Court of Tampa, there was an option for the court. I don't know that the officer knew he had an option. He could have said, I want this, because, like I said, they're intertwined. If you get that conviction, you're coming here to talk to Mr. Bull. If what I'm saying, that is a constitutionally infirm conviction and should not be used to take anything from this gentleman, then the court is not helping the commission. It's cleaning its docket of cases is all it's doing. It's trying to get the cases off its docket. It is not thinking forward, as you all may be in that position, that if I don't get a valid conviction for this action, I can't use it in the commission hearing to revoke his license. So, yes, I'm saying a person, and I'm not advocating this, believe me, for whoever's listening, because it probably is the best option for a waterman with a suspended license not to come to court and get tried in his absence and get convicted or not, because if my argument held water with the commission would have watermen doing that a lot. Now, I'm not suggesting that's the way to do it, but that's the, in this situation alone, and I'm only asking you to rule on this situation, that is what is going on.
I see the problem.
That's the big problem, but the other thing is that the conviction is not a fact. It's not a predicate. This is not a violation. We don't have to have a conviction.
I hear what counsel said. It is a predicate conviction because we're working on a statute that says if you find a violation of a subtitle statute,
right,
then you may take his license.
But it doesn't say
prove the violation first when you're using.
But you don't have to prove. Do you have to prove a conviction? No. You have to prove a violation of the statute.
Right, of the subtitle.
Sure. And.
Okay. Right. We're going to move along. Mr. Erskine, you have another question? I have a quick question.
Yes, sir.
Based on the officer's testimony, your client, Mr. Ray, was informed of the officer's approach and hid in the wheelhouse, and that there were denials, according to the officer, that Mr. Ray was present.
If I didn't object, I should have objected, because now you're back to hearsay. Somebody is telling him something. The thing that the officer did that made me not want to object is he said, I was told perhaps this happened. What he saw is when somebody spoke to this gentleman went in the wheelhouse. When he called to the gentleman in the wheelhouse, he came out. But he talked to somebody, he being an officer, talked to another waterman, I presume, and they lied to him. What Mr. Ray did was not a lie.
Correct.
So Mr. Ray, he might have gone in the wheelhouse, but he knows what the guy told him when they conversed. He might have said there's $1 million in the wheelhouse, go look for it.
Okay.
Doubt it. But, you know, we can't assume those things because we just don't know them. It would be inappropriate to assume anything.
Okay. Any other questions from the commission? Okay, counsel, you've done a very able job. Now let's see what the commission wants to do. The chairman does not make motions.
Are we deciding it? I guess, what is our procedure here? I mean, are you asking us first to decide whether we think we have the authority to hear this? I mean, to do this?
I don't think that's necessary, and Mr. Hall doesn't think that's necessary.
Because just a plain non-attorney, non-person, we revoked his license. I was here. We told him what he could not do. We took away his fishing privileges. He was caught working commercially fishing. We have a conviction. I've got his signature saying, I promise to appear at this time and place shown above at the court. He must be there. He didn't show up. So to me, this just common sense says that he was fishing with a revoked license. So now the discussion is what we're going to do about that. And we were not ambiguous when we revoked his license the first time. I was here. He was specifically told what he could not do. And we asked him never to be here again. And here he is. So he gave me a headache. You gave me a headache, and I'm sure it's very eloquent, but just common sense says that he was doing something that he was not supposed to be doing, and we've already revoked his license once, and he's back.
Mr. Tankard.
Yes, I think I heard the legal representative for Mr. Ray said that he hadn't done too much, or I forget exactly the words, but I see here harvesting oysters from polluted grounds. Failure to properly maintain layers of ice. These are all public safety. These are the most serious of convictions that we really have. Public safety is real. And I know we can get all bogged down in legal terms, but public safety is real. And I'm sorry, but I would like to move our staff recommendation of 5-year revocation. He knew the game. He knew what we were doing. We can get caught up in a bunch of jargon, but Mr. Ray knew exactly what was happening.
I want to weigh in a little bit on that as well here. So from my perspective here, Mr. Ray's past convictions are not immaterial. They are serious. Harvesting during a closed season is oyster poaching. Harvesting from polluted waters is extremely serious and is a direct threat not just to the health of the consuming public, but to the health of the economic prosperity of the entire shellfish industry. If the shellfish industry gets a reputation as bringing bad oysters to market that could cause consumers to get sick, that's a direct and serious economic impact and an impact to the entire livelihood of everybody that works on the water in the shellfish industry. Failure to maintain the proper layers of ice on oysters is another warm water requirement that we have to make sure that the product that comes out of the water and goes on the dinner table is safe to eat. So despite these previous convictions, the commission only revoked Mr. Ray's licenses and title fishing privileges for 6 months. And that was back in January of last year, about a year ago, almost from today. And Mr. Neal's right. We told Mr. Ray, we don't want to see you again. And dot the I's and cross the T's. I say that routinely. But the fact of the matter is that the commission only imposed a 6-month revocation period, which at the time, there were others that received a lot longer revocation periods than that. I believe that the commission cut Mr. Ray a break at that point a year ago. And 4 months later, he's working on a boat. And he's doing things that are in direct violation to the revocation order that was issued by the commission. And the commission's authority here needs to be upheld. That said, I think 5 years is too much. Mr. Neal.
I was kind of going that way. The original revocation was justified. Oyster health violation is nothing to sneeze at. What he did this time is basically violated his revocation. It's not as serious health problem. He was working on a boat shoveling out fish under a revoked license. It's sorry he couldn't wait to 6 months. Where he could be doing it legally, and so he's here again. So I think we have to do something. But I guess I agree with your sentiment. We had a 6-month revocation. He was caught shoveling fish. We got to do something. But I too think 5 years is more than I would want to do. Well, I sure hate seeing this guy here again.
As do I. I'll say this. So in this particular round, if he was caught harvesting from a closed area or poaching from a sanctuary, or harvesting oysters from polluted waters, that's a very bad underlying predicate offense here to the issues that brought him here today. But that end, he was participating in fishing activities while his privileges were revoked. And while shoveling fish may seem to be harmless, the commission's authority here to have the revocation and sanction orders followed is important. If these are not followed, these are meaningless. So to that end, I mean, I'll throw it out. My gut impression would be a year of revocation for fishing privileges and licenses and a civil penalty of $1,000, something basically we're just doubling. He caused himself to get double what he'd already had. It's kind of where I'm going with this, and I'm more than open for suggestions.
You had a motion, so where are you?
Well, it's a motion, but I didn't hear a second.
Can I hear the motion again?
Motion was for a simple one, staff recommended.
Oh, okay. All right.
Anybody have anything to add?
Well, if we don't have a second.
Let me go procedurally here. Is there a second to Mr. Tankard's motion for a staff recommendation of 5 years of revocation and of licenses and tidal fishing privileges? Is there a second? Mr. Tankard, your motion dies for lack of a second.
Okay. And I have counsel had a suggestion of imposing a fine.
Civil penalty.
Civil penalty. That's right. I'm sorry. We sure are technical. All right. Civil penalty while allowing him still to work. And so I actually, that would be a possibility with me. If it would be a civil penalty and then a probationary
yeah.
period for maybe 5 years for all I've been on. So I could see doing that. I'm feeling nicer today.
That's your motion.
You had some hands up down there.
Got a hand up here, Mr. Minor?
I'd like to make a motion to do 1 year revocation, maybe a 3 year probation, and a $750 civil penalty.
Motion by Mr. Minor for 3 years of revocation.
No, a year of revocation.
1 year of revocation. Oh, I'm sorry. Followed by 3 years of probation. Does the revocation motion include revocation of tidal fishing privileges or not?
Yes.
It's a motion of a year of revocation of licenses and tidal fishing privileges followed by 3 years of probation and a civil penalty of $750. Correct?
Yes.
That's the motion. Is there a second?
Question. Is it possible?
Mrs. Cummins.
What happens with, he still currently has probation until 2018, so.
We would restart the clock from today's motion and today's decision.
Okay, thank you.
So there's a motion on the table. Is there a second?
I'll second.
A second by Mr. Tankard. Is there a discussion on the motion? Mr. Erskine.
I would echo the comments I heard before about the prior convictions and as serious as they are. Shoveling, we can argue back and forth about shoveling fish is fishing. I said, you said, counsel, that it, you know, was. And we went back and forth on code sections and things like that. And I think you made the comment that what got him here was the notice of conviction in the court. But really what gets him here is breaking the laws. And the reason we're here again is because he's not doing the right thing. And there are a lot of watermen out there that do the right thing. So we can argue back and forth about code sections and this and that, but it's disappointing and frustrating to have repeat offenders here time and time again. And it puts a bad reputation for the watermen that are doing the right thing. Somehow they can do it the right way. So I agree with the motion because I do think there needs to be a revocation in there. So thank you.
Any other discussions? Let me raise a question. And it's not about the license revocation / privileges revocation period or the probationary period. The civil penalty part of the motion of $750, I guess I'm wondering whether or not the board feels that This is something that this particular offender can actually pay. Just throw it out there for an observation. So, to that end, we have a motion that's duly seconded on the table here. Is there any further discussion? I'll call the question. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any noes?
I said no.
No by Mr. Neal. The chair votes aye. The motion passes 6-1. It's a year revocation of licenses entitled fishing privileges, followed by 3 years of probation, effective today. If you go with the officer here, there will be $750 civil penalty. He'll give you notice of your appeal rights if you proceed with him. And it's a written piece of paper.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you all for your time.
Counselor.
Sorry about
that. Counselor, you did an excellent job here.
Thank you. I appreciate you listening to me.
Thank you.
Glad you're here.
Mr. William C. Parks. Is Mr. Parks in the room? Mr. Parks, please raise your right hand. Officer Drummond as well here. Do you hereby swear the testimony you'll give here today will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
I do.
Thank you.
Mr. William C. Parks, is a commercial registered licensee, was convicted on July 26, 2016, for one count of possession of uncooked crabs, 34 and a one bushel, under section 28.2708 of the Code of Virginia, and on August 12, 2015, for one count of possession of uncooked crabs, 41 in one bushel under section 28.2-708 of the Code of Virginia. The commission guidelines for sanctions specify that two convictions of possession of greater than 20 undersized crabs per bushel within a 24-month period should result in Mr. Parks coming before the commission.
Officer Drummond, what can you tell us about these two cases?
First offense occurred on Wednesday, June the 24th, 2015, in approximately 1445 hours in Accomack County. I followed a commercial crabber to a Nancock Seafood just outside the town of Nancock. I'd actually received a call from another waterman telling me that he was en route to that location, Mr. Parks, with what they thought were undersized crabs. Upon arrival at the business, I identified William C. Parks, who's standing to my right as a licensed crabber, and noticed a bushel baskets, or a couple bushel baskets of hard crabs in his truck. I called one U.S. standard bushel Mr. Parks' crabs and found 41 undersized male blue hard crabs measuring less than 5 inches from tip to tip of their longest spikes. Of course, Code Section 28.2708 states it is unlawful for any person to catch, take, or have in his possession more than 10 hard crabs per U.S. standard bushel, which measure less than 5 inches from tip to tip of their longest spikes. I did ask Mr. Parks if he knew they were in the basket. He said he did. On August the 12th, 2015, he was found guilty in Accomack County General District Court with a $50 fine and court costs. The second offense was June 15, 2016. This offense occurred on Wednesday, June 15, 2016, approximately 1,300 hours in Northampton County. I checked the commercial crabber as he returned to the boat ramp at Willis Wharf. Identified this crabber as William C. Parks, who's standing to my right. Mr. Parks is licensed to crab pot as an agent for his father. I called one U.S. standard bushel of crabs from Mr. Parks' boat, found 34 undersized male blue hard crabs measuring less than 5 inches from tip to tip of their longest spikes. I also, there seemed to be some question from Mr. Parks and his father who were on board the boat and whether or not the crabs were legal, so I allowed them to check the crabs with my cold stick as well with the same results. On September 27th, 2016, he was convicted in Northampton County General District Court with a $75 fine and court costs. He did not appear on either one.
Are there questions from the commission? Mr. Parks, would you step up to the podium? What would you like the commission to know? What happened to her?
Well, it's one for the June 15, 2016. I had a fill-in. Our regular mate did not show up. I called somebody in that we had used in the past. And everything was supposed to be legal. David Drummond started looking for, you know, through the bushel. We noticed there were some undersized crabs. Don't get me wrong, some of the tips were broke, but even with that, I realized that there were, you know, too many undersized crabs. But it certainly wasn't purposely done because there were illegal crabs all throughout the bushels and the rest of our crabs. Like I said, he was a fill-in, and it was a total mistake because we certainly weren't trying to do anything wrong. Didn't need any trouble, and believe me, he'll no longer work on me or my father's boat ever again. Because I certainly didn't want to come in front of you guys over this.
I can tell you that we did not want to see you here.
I realize that. But, you know, I realize that I'm ultimately responsible for what goes on the boat. But, you know, I hired him to go in for us and my father to work for us today, and it was a huge mistake. It cost me pretty big.
It's going to happen again?
No, not with him. No, sir. He's over me. Period.
That's the answer we're looking
for.
Yeah.
But I can guarantee you, that guy will not be ever on the phone anymore. Me and my father.
Questions from the commission? Mr. Tankard.
Out of Willis Wharf, with the same guy with you again? When you're at Willis's Wharf. On June 15th. Is that where that what you're talking about?
That's the one I'm talking about. Yes, sir.
Okay.
Other questions from the commission?
Yeah. So, Mr. Neal. So that was one time. So what happened the other time?
That was a total mess up. That was purposeful, I'm not going to lie, but. Like I said, they had gone straight, totally, and we've been checked all throughout the year since that ticket from well over a year ago, and we had a lot of problems. We're checked fairly often. And, I mean, if there had been a problem, I would certainly have quite a few more tickets. That was the case.
There had been tickets before 2000.
In the past,
but I noticed that there hadn't been any for a while.
No, long time. Yeah.
We're going to go forward and not do this again, right? Okay. Stephanie, what's the staff recommendation?
Staff recommendation, the commission guidelines for sanctions specify that two convictions of possession of greater than 20 undersized crabs per bushel within a 24-month period should result in at least a one-year probation. In accordance with Section 28.2-232 of the Code of Virginia, staff recommends the commission place Mr. Parks on probation for a period of 1 year from the date of this commission meeting, January 24, 2017, through January 23rd, 2018. Any failure on Mr. Park's part to obey any of the laws or regulations relating to the marine resources of the Commonwealth during the one-year probation would result in Mr. Park's appearing before the commission for a hearing on license revocation.
Mr. Neal.
This is for the officers more than anything else. Can you confirm his statement? Has he been checked since all this?
being anyway. I may have checked him maybe one other time. One other time.
Ms. Erskine.
I'd note that these were almost 1 year apart, the 2015 and 2016 convictions he had for the on-call crafts. And then the prior ones that the commissioner mentioned, that was 2004, I see. So that seems to be sporadic. And in that regard, I would accept staff make a motion to accept staff recommendation for a one-year probation.
And I second it.
So a motion by Mr. Erskine, a second by Mr. Miner here for a one-year period of probation. Any discussion? I'll call the question. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any noes? Chair votes aye as well. Ms. Parks, we do not want to see you back here. This is the year of probation. Dot your I's, cross your T's. You do not want another violation.
No, sir. I don't either.
You do not. And we don't want to see you back here. Not under these circumstances.
Do you think, but you, Commissioner, Mr. Parks, you do realize when, if you appear here again, it will be for a license revocation. You understand that part, right?
You saw what happened to the gentleman before you, right? Okay. If you go with the officer, he'll give you a piece of paper here. It'll tell you what your appeal rights are if you want to appeal the commission's decision. The decision is you get a year of probation, effective today. We don't want to see you back here. No more violations. We have these regulations against keeping undersized crabs for a reason. So they grow to adult crabs, so they reproduce, so we have more crabs. It's in everybody's best interest that everybody follow these laws. Okay. Thank you, Mr. Parks.
Next case is Mr. Justin C. Travis.
Mr. Justin Travis in the room?
Yes, sir.
Please raise your right hand. Do you hereby swear the testimony you'll give here today will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
Yes, sir.
Thank you, gentlemen. Let the record reflect Officer Cagle and Mr. Travis were sworn in.
Mr. Justin Travis, a commercial fisherman registered licensee, was convicted on December the 5th, 2016, for one count of having in possession uncooled oysters, 8 quarts, according to Section 28.2-201 of the Code of Virginia, and under Chapter 2260-40, and on November the 7th, 2016, for one count of having in possession uncooled oysters, 8 quarts, under Section 28.2-201 of the Code of Virginia and Chapter 2260-40.
Officer Cagle, what can you tell us about these two cases?
Yes, sir. On October 5th, 2016, I was in the Rappahannock River, Area 4, doing routine patrol. Checking boats. I checked a vessel that had three commercial watermen on them, one of them being Mr. Travis standing here to my right. When I went ahead and culled their oysters, I came out with over 8 quarts of oysters, 2 heaping cans and some on the deck, each can being 4 quarts. I issued them a summons, as well as the two other people on the boat. Approximately a week later, while at Hills Marina, on October 24th, 2016, I was doing checks of all the vessels coming in that I could, and checked the vessel. Mr. Travis here was on the vessel as well, and again, I came up with over 8 quarts of unculled oysters. The oysters were small oysters, not a lot of shell in there, but just undersized oysters. Again, I issued him a citation for having unculled oysters, as well as the two other gentlemen in the boat. On November 7th, 2016, Mr. Travis failed to appear in court and was fined $150 plus $121 court costs, Middlesex. And then on December 5th, 2016, Mr. Travis appeared in court and was fined $150 and $86 court costs.
Questions from the commission? For the record, Officer Cagle, the tolerance limit is 4 quarts. So this was double the tolerance limit twice. Correct.
Peeping cans. If you had, normally it was just, once it gets up to the top, that's the forecourt. These were actually had a big dome on them, and some were falling off.
Okay. Questions? Mr. Tanker.
Was Mr. Travis cooperative on both occasions?
For the most part, yeah. First time, yes, he was cooperative. Second time, he was a little upset because he knew he was getting a ticket, but that's understandable. Mm-hmm. He was polite, though, for the most part.
Mr. Erskine.
I had the same question.
Anybody with a different question? Thank you, officer. Mr. Travis.
The first time, it's my first day operating a boot for a Willie Taylor, Bob Taylor's son. First day operating the boot, pretty much just getting used to the rig. The two guys were on there that were calling the oysters that done it for Willie Taylor, Bobby Taylor for the past couple of years. Thought they knew, you know what I mean, thought they had it under. But, you know, the second one, yes, I was calling oysters. Last day of the Rappahannock, you know, that one's definitely on me. The reason I didn't show you the first court date, I was incarcerated for a week. Reason I wasn't there, and so I called about 4,000 bushels of oysters, and these are two that got me here.
Mr. Erskine.
You have no prior convictions?
Yes, sir.
All right, thank you.
How long have you been a commercial water?
So, I've had my commercial card for 5 years. I've been on the water since I was 15.
Okay. Other questions from the commission? Mr. Travis, do you know why we have a size limit?
Yes, sir.
We need little oysters to make big oysters.
I understand.
It's in everybody's best interest.
I understand.
Stephanie, what's the staff recommendation?
The commission guideline for sanctions specified that one conviction of possession of greater than 50% or 100% over the tolerance of undersized shellfish within a 12-month period should result in at least a one-year probation in accordance with Section 28.2232 of the Code of Virginia. Staff recommends the commission place Mr. Travis on probation for a period of 1 year from the date of this commission meeting, January 24, 2017, through January 23, 2018. Any failure on Mr. Travis's part to obey any of the laws or regulations relating to the marine resources of the Commonwealth during the one-year probation will result in Mr. Travis appearing before the commission for a hearing on license revocation.
Mr. Travis, what do you think about the staff recommendation the commission put you on probation for a year?
Seems fair to me.
So it shall be, I suspect. Mr. Packard?
I'll move to approve staff recommendation.
Motion by Mr. Tankard.
Second.
Second by Mr. Neal. Any discussion? Call the question. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any noes? Chair votes aye as well. Mr. Travis.
I understand.
We don't want to see you again. Don't do this anymore. Dot your I's, cross your T's. Make sure it's right on the nose.
Appreciate it.
If you go with the officer, you'll be given a letter that spells out your appeal rights. Thank you, sir. Be safe out there.